Hello and welcome to the Digital Insight, the technology, procurement and supply chain podcast that delivers valuable C-level perspective into the core issues surrounding business transformation and digital disruption. Each episode will bring you the most inspiring executive insights from those who are leading transformation strategies within the world's biggest and best known companies. The Digital Insight, disrupt, transform, evolve.
Welcome to the Digital Insight. This week's guest is Kuvishin Air. Kuvish is the current CPO at the New York Metropolitan Transportation Authority, and he'll be discussing what it takes from a procurement perspective to keep one of the world's busiest cities functioning throughout a global pandemic. Welcome to the Digital Insight. And thank you very much for agreeing to give us some of your valuable time today. Maybe we could start if you could introduce yourself and your current position, and maybe just talk briefly about some of the responsibilities that you've got at the moment. And then maybe we could go on and talk about some of the work that you've done at NYMTA since you started.
Okay, great. Well, firstly, thank you for inviting me to this podcast, and I'm excited to be here. I am currently the Chief Procurement Officer for the New York Metropolitan Transportation Authority, and it's 2 years since I've joined them. And a slight bit of history with regard to that: the MTA embarked on a huge transformation effort across all its operating divisions to transform the organization into a more efficient, effective organization than what it was used to working with. So I got a call one day to, would I be interested in this position? And, I decided, okay, it sounds quite interesting, very challenging, and decided to throw my hat in the ring, as they say. And lo and behold, it's 2 years down the line. It's gone like a flash. Can you believe it? But overall, my responsibilities include managing the MTA's procurement and sourcing operations, which also include the logistics, warehousing, and distribution aspects as well across the MTA's operations. Now, what that means is the MTA has New York City Transit, which is made up of the entire subway system, the bus system, as well as Metro North Railroad, Long Island Railroad, and our Bridges and Tunnel division as well. So overall, we are looking at a complement of 70,000 people working for the MTA and across a region that spreads through the entire New York State as well as into Connecticut. But just to give you a picture of the scale of this organization, we run this organization on a 24-hour basis, running 6,000 subway cars at any given time, 6,000 buses, as well as close to 4,000 commuter railroad cars on the Long Island as well as the Metro North system. So a massive organization. In fact, we are the largest transportation authority in North America. From that stems the fact that we now run and my portfolio extends for all procurement activities across the board. I manage a staff of close on to 1,300 people across the region, and with a budget of close on to $7 billion on any given annual year. It's been challenging but very exciting. And essentially, what I've done over these 2 years is to combine all the procurement, sourcing, and logistics and distribution activities as opposed to working in disparate companies and basically sometimes to our own detriment competing against each other for resources, we've now combined all of that into one procurement organization spread out across all of the agencies, but having a one focus on how we source, how we procure, how we distribute, as well as manage our inventory. Our inventory at any given time is probably in the region of $700-800 million that we have to hold. And that in itself is quite large and has a challenge where we would have to have procure and distribute something that is almost part of our everyday lives now when I talk about PPE. So we have PPE as well as up to, you know, massive rail car equipment, wheels, engines, all of that. So, you know, the entire spectrum. I also manage all the indirect side of the house. Now, what we call that is our non-core procurement. Everything relating to professional services, consulting services, all IT procurements, both software and hardware, including as well a massive part of our operating budget being the procurement of services, HR services, medical insurance services, pharmacy services as well. So all in all, yeah, a wide and should I say exciting challenge that I have.
And also, you know, such a massive scale as well, you know, and you talked about some of the services that the MTA provides and it's, you know, 24/7 and it's, you know, there are different regions and different authorities. I mean, how do you talked a little bit there about your, you know, your aims and the ambitions of when you got into this role. How did you kind of start the journey of creating this kind of new procurement function?
Well, it actually stemmed from my experience that I had encountered with, I used to work for Alstom. So Alstom is a multinational company. And I initially started off working for Alstom, managing the Southern African region, and then transferred to the US managing their North American operations. And then around 2014, General Electric purchased Alstom. And I was part of the acquisition and transformation efforts, which was the world's largest industrial acquisition, around $12.5 billion, that also had to encompass 60,000 people worldwide. So I went through a process of assimilation, transformation, and the whole acquisition. And by dealing with that, I in retrospect, acquired a lot of these transformation skills and experience. And it was one of these aspects that the MTA liked, as well as my procurement, contracts, and legal background. So when I joined the MTA, we had a chief procurement officer for each of the organizations that I had mentioned. So Metro North, New York City Transit, buses, subways, bridges and tunnels, as well as Long Island and Metro North, as I mentioned. So what we did was initially to create an organizational structure that made sense. So by consolidating that and creating a structure where I also created a supply chain center of excellence, which would effectively look at supplier management, vendor management, vendor compliance. We are obliged to take any procurement over $1 million to the board. So creating a board reporting process and putting all of that into place. So creating a center of excellence would support my own organization, but as well supporting the outside organization. As you would know, you have analytics and data analytics is critical in any organization. So set up an entire team reporting on that. We have legal obligations when it comes to our minority women-owned businesses. So we also, from a statutory perspective, have looked at that to achieve that. And creating an organization that, firstly, we looked at the structure and how that structure would work. Work very closely with folks in setting that up. So we set that up and then started to appoint folks in that area. But one of the key aspirations of this transformation was category management, implementing a category management approach to the way we sourced, procured, and distributed essential services and items that we require. So, a simple example is when COVID hit, we, like the rest of the world, we're caught within this massive global requirement for masks. Now, if we are running a 70,000 strong organization on a 24-hour basis, we had to almost immediately, we were on the back foot in providing this essential PPE like the rest of the world. And we've managed to do that. I worked with setting up what we call an essential tiger team approach, where we met 8 a.m. every single day to understand what were the needs of the organization, what we required, everything from masks to sanitizer to gloves to cleaning solutions, as well as also cleaning and disinfecting the stations in New York, as well as all the rolling stock. That in itself was a challenge. But, and if I sound somewhat self-congratulatory, my team came out in flying colors. To date, we have managed to source, procure, and distribute 43 million masks, 31 million pairs of gloves, 500,000 gallons of cleaning solutions and sanitizer, as well as set up contracts to clean the stations and disinfect them. And at some stage, we're working on nanotechnology, and we still are. But putting that together, I think what were the successes is that we worked as a collective across five separate disparate companies, putting that together by being able to anticipate what were the needs from the operating agencies, what were the needs from the folks on the ground, analyzing the data, what were our daily burn rates, what did we need, and even to the extent tracking the PPE and the N95 masks, all the way to where the masks were sitting on at the dock in China, even to the extent where I think at one stage I even called up the Department of Homeland Affairs and said, Homeland Security, sorry, and said, we have stuff coming into JFK. You need to clear this right away. And I said, please, you got to help us. So it also took some innovative thinking to get it there. But kudos to my staff. They came across flying colors. And we also, as a general to your viewers, I'd like to say we also anticipated that we would somehow need this. And what I mean by this is when Superstorm Sandy hit, there was also this urgent need for PPE. So way back in 2013, 2014, we realized there was this need. And unlike other companies, we had what I call a sort of precious stock of PPE cargo that we continually had and updated and refreshed. And in so doing, that gave us the impetus to be able to beat and have stock in hand and beat that urgent global demand. So I think all companies are now cottoned on to the fact we need that and they're going to do it. So that in itself proved to be, a boon to us.
And obviously, COVID is something that nobody would actively want to have to work you know, against, or however you want to look at it like that. But would you say that working in that kind of environment accelerated some of the things that you kind of had to do anyway, but because we were in a time of a global pandemic, that some operations and some decisions even were kind of made with a little bit more enthusiasm and alacrity than maybe otherwise? You know, maybe things might have taken a little bit longer.
Definitely so. Definitely so. It was critical that we started to think and act very quickly. And that was the reason why we had leadership calls at 9 a.m. every day. And, you know, this was, we even, you know, as a government organization, we were having these calls on Saturday and Sunday as well. It was a call to arms of, if I can use that expression, for everyone. And that in itself enabled us to make quick leadership decisions that led to us being able to react very positively. So absolutely true. And that was not just from a PPE perspective. That was across the organization in terms of cleaning, disinfecting, and still being able to run service. Because unlike the rest of the world, in terms of, you know, other commercial activities that came to a standstill, we still were running on a 24-hour basis, albeit on a limited service, but we had to get those essential workers, the doctors, the nurses, and all of those folks to the respective places. So we were still running service. So, you know, to especially our essential workers, the transportation, they felt the brunt of it and came out shining. So it is a testament to the hard work of our essential service, especially at the MTA, that in itself we were able to provide that service and maintain it to a large extent.
And in terms of the changes that you've brought in, certainly organisationally, in terms of the procurement function, how would you describe the procurement strategy at MTA at the moment? How would you define it?
I think we've moved into various aspects. So three critical areas that I concentrated on, as I mentioned, was the first, category management. Now, what do I mean by that? If you have five separate disparate organizations and each of them are buying parts, commodities, services, how do we establish, firstly, a category management strategy and a purchasing and sourcing strategy for that? For example, five different agencies bought spare parts for rolling stock from a particular service provider. So what we did was concentrate, get together, put a team together, and then be able to develop a strategy for buying spare parts from a particular supplier, but being able to get fixed price costing when it came to certain line items, but at the same time, leverage the MTA's massive spend. We're talking about billions of dollars of spend, hundreds of millions. And by doing that, we actually established partnerships with our suppliers. When I came in, my approach was, we cannot take the approach of, you know, be able to knock every supplier, you know, and on their heads and say, we want this, thou shalt do this. What we were looking at is establishing a partnership model where it made sense to work with the MTA, but at the same time, we are delivering value to the MTA from a purchasing perspective. To that end, we were able to establish a category management approach, roll out that strategy, and procure uniforms, spare parts, certain rolling stock, also building supplies. Lo and behold, we have a massive need for building supplies where our operations folks go out and repair 465 stations on a 24-hour basis. So we took it to the extent where we leveraged, and thanks to the excellent negotiating efforts of my team, negotiated building supplies, which were at an all-time high, we negotiated pre-COVID rates. And by doing that, we saved MTA millions of rands. I also, on another aspect, established a cost reduction strategy across the entire MTA. As you know, we are dealing with taxpayers' money, and it's important for us to be able to render value with regard to each procurement that we engage in. And to date, I'm pleased to say that for 2021, we have achieved a cost reduction of $160 million for the MTA. This was unheard of when I got to the MTA, especially I had to start with inculcating a culture of savings and inculcating that culture and then being able to translate that into bottom line savings across the board, not only for procurement, but for our operations teams to understand that. So it made so much sense, and the numbers speak for themselves.
I mean, you mentioned earlier the importance of data in kind of underpinning a lot of the work you do. Could you sort of talk a little bit about the actual detail of that? I mean, are you bringing in data analysts and scientists into the function? And have you been incorporating new software and new systems into the procurement function?
So initially, I think for 2020, something that people, may have not realized that we are, to a large extent, a cash business, where if people don't drive the subway, they don't drive the bus, they don't drive the trains, we don't get any money in. So, we were literally losing, I think it was like $200 million a week. So 2020 was a tough year from a cash perspective. Luckily, over 2021, and especially towards the end of 2021, we got a lot of support from the federal government. So we've managed to get funds in that to maintain and support our operational aspects and operational funding. So it's taken 2021 for me to at least start to put together a strategy and link that to a financial plan. But what we've done is come up with a few innovative ideas that were inexpensive. For instance, I want to bring the MTA up to modern day standards. But if I got it to a level where we could see data and be able to use that data, it would be excellent. A lot of it was paper based transactions, paper based information sitting on Excel spreadsheets. So what we've managed to look at is a simple solution where it's called Microsoft Power BI. You are able to synthesize data, look at it, be able to make intelligent decisions where that data is translated into dashboards, and then look at that. To answer your question, we have brought on some data analysts. I'm looking for the holy grail of data scientists, and being able to attract them, I'm busy with that. But I've set up a data analytics team that work on these specific areas where we're starting to get data, analyze it, and be able to synthesize the data where we then utilize that to make intelligent decisions. I'm a long ways from claiming victory. It's fledgling. I'm working on it, and it's one of the key focuses of us going forward in terms of using data analytics. So especially at the MTA, we have disparate old legacy IT systems that don't talk to each other. So it's a challenge where even in my inventory and warehousing, I've got three old systems that are on burning platforms. So purely being able to put that together is going to cost us $30, $40 million. So what do I do in the interim? In the interim, we've set up working with young data analysts who we brought in to be able to look at data and for now translate that into dashboards and being able to use dashboards then to to run the business. So, you know, small steps. I have to crawl. We're in kind of the walking stage now, and hopefully in the next few years we'll be able to run from that aspect.
And what would you say, what sort of qualities would you say that a modern chief procurement officer needs to possess?
I think I would say a critical aspect is adaptability and flexibility. It's about how we are able to look at what's, you know, and my old mentor used to say this, what's coming around the corner, what's around the corner, being able to anticipate where are the changes and how we react to that. So for me, it's about, as a leader, as a chief procurement officer, is being able to firstly have transparency with the way I deal with my team, with the way I deal with my colleagues. And COVID has taught us that. I've also realized that it's that traditional form of approach is out the window in terms of working. We can work remotely. We can come into the office 2-3 times a week. It's all about being able to give, firstly, flexibility to the organization. And by doing that, we're achieving, I've seen fantastic efficiency during the COVID period with my folks. Coming back to myself, I think it's important to understand the new supply chain. Everyone's saying the supply chain is broken. I think that it's not broken, but the supply chain has radically changed. That's the difference. And how we, as chief procurement officers, are able to anticipate what's coming next. And one of the critical areas that I'm looking at now is what we call supply chain transparency. Prior to this, what we looked at is if we engage with a particular supplier, we would look at their what would their sub-supplier be in terms of what were the critical interventions so that they could deliver to us. Now what we have to do is take it to 3-4 to the fourth tier of those sub-sub-suppliers to understand the value chain and the supply chain all the way down to where is the raw materials, where are the raw materials? Do we have the availability? Do we have resourcing in our sub-supplier, resourcing challenges in our sub-suppliers? And being able to anticipate that is what we need to do. For instance, what we looked at when we saw the supply chain crisis coming, we immediately went back and looked at what our critical inventory items were. How much do we have? What do we need? Do we go back to our critical suppliers and start to look at the supply chain and understand what challenges were coming to us? Now, it's certain aspects you would have to push your suppliers for, but being able to anticipate those needs is critical. Also importantly, the concept of procurement and that traditional approach to procurement is out the window. It's all about strategic partnering at the moment. I am working on massive procurements as we speak, and I've met with a number of the chairmen, the senior vice presidents of our supplier organizations. And what I am working on is a partnership model. And that partnering is how do we derive value? If it means that a supplier has to come into North America and build a factory, then, for instance, what does that mean for the jobs that we've created? But more importantly, being able to give our suppliers the visibility, not only over the next 3-4 years, but what does that my procurement strategy lend itself to over the next 5, 10, 15 years? And being able to give clarity to our suppliers so that they make those real investments that not only benefit the NTA, it benefits our suppliers, it creates jobs as well as invest into the country. That's what's critical.
And I guess you've outlined some of the challenging aspects to being a CPO at the moment. But I guess also it's probably quite an exciting time to be a CPO at the moment as well.
Extremely exciting. I love it. I love the challenge. But more importantly, I think everyone, the whole world, has cottoned on to this concept of supply chain. Supply chain is no longer this hidden away and, you know, it's talked about as a back office function. You know, I report to the chairman of the board and the CEO, but more importantly, it's being discussed at the dinner table nowadays. The New York Times just ran an article the other day talking about this very aspect, where supply chain is at, you know, it's the tip of the tongue of everyone. It's dinner conversations. It's boardroom conversation. So I'm very excited by it. I think we are living in a time where it's important for us to understand the changing and evolution of the workplace, the changing and evolution of our supply chain, and being able to put all of that together in the exciting times that we have ahead, especially for the U.S. and globally, where a number of the governments are looking at how do we start to inculcate a culture of, you know, if this ever happens again, what do we do? Do we start to have in-house capability? Do we buy? We need to start investing in infrastructure. The president's infrastructure plan has been approved. So there's massive challenges, but exciting times ahead for someone like myself. But across the board, I think it brings to the forefront the supply chain and how important it is, and the fact that we no longer a back office function. We have a seat at the table, and you know, I'm excited for the future.
Well, that was great. I think that's a really good point to leave it on. It was a fascinating insight into what you do. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for listening to the Digital Insight Podcast in association with theinterface.net and cpostrategy.com. The Digital Insight is brought to you by B2E Media Limited. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to subscribe, rate and review. And don't forget to check out our podcast archive at www.b2e-media.com/thedigitalinsight.